I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
G'day, welcome to The Call. 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Wednesday, the 1st of May. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you with us here on the show. Our two experts for today, Ben Clark from TMS Capital and Henry Jennings from Marcus Today. Welcome to both of you. Interesting day out there. It's looking pretty red, isn't it, across the board? Not a lot of places to hide, although I was just taking a look at across the sectors. Maybe uranium is the place to be today because that's the only part of the market that appears to be going up. Ben, yeah. What are you seeing at the moment? I mean, obviously, this is driven by some wage price index out of the States. Inflationary pressures, certainly in wages. That's spooking markets with the prospect perhaps that rate cuts are going to be pushed even further out. And in fact, we might get some hint tomorrow with obviously when the Fed and Jay Powell steps up after their meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, obviously, we're back in this sort of mood of good news is bad news. So good news for the economy just keeps pushing out these rate cuts. And we continue to see, like, you know, in America and in Australia, stronger than expected numbers being continually printed. And, you know, that's got the conjecture back against what the rate cycle looks like. But, you know, markets have had a good run and, you know, they were due for a pause, you sort of felt like. So not overly surprised. You know, I don't think there's anything too sinister there. US quarterly earnings have been really strong once again. Amazon had a cracking result last night after market. So, you know, we'll see what Jerome Powell has to say tonight. It'll be very keenly awaited.
Yeah, Henry, how are you seeing it out there today? And I guess, you know, more broadly, what we've seen, have seen something of a pullback. We got more to go, do you think?
Hi, guys. I guess, you know, to some extent, I think we have got the sideways drift happening at the moment. I had my fat and happy theory at Easter where the market would peak at Easter, and it has done that. This next sort of 6 month spell between now and September tends to be historically a period of underperformance, shall we say. And although we have seen, not a bad US reporting season, a lot of the companies that have reported well really don't have anything to do with Australia at all. You know, Amazon, really, you know, that's really not going to affect us. AMD, not such great results. So, you know, I'm not sure we can draw an awful lot from US reporting season as yet. For us, of course, the important thing is the bank season, which kicks off tomorrow with National Australia Bank. Then we've got Macquarie. Then we've got the budget. We've got the other banks as well. We've got the Macquarie Equity Conference coming up. So there's going to be a little bit of confessional there. I think what's really hits me at the moment is there are so many companies out there that are reaffirming guidance. Reaffirming guidance is great. At least they're not cutting guidance. But no one's really going out there and upping guidance and being really ultra confident about things going forward, which I guess, you know, even when you look at the gold sector, which you would like to think would be doing pretty well at the moment, despite the fact that gold's come off a little bit, you know, you'd think that their guidance would be upped and everyone would be happy as Larry. But at the moment, that doesn't seem to be the way of things. So I think caution. You know, at the end of the day, the US market can continue to rally if it's going to rally. It had a terrible April. On the back of rates being here. They're going to be here for a long time. We're not going to see any cuts. We're not going to see any rises. The Fed's boxed itself into a position where it is data dependent, and the data suggests the US economy is not slowing down the way it should, and therefore they will not cut rates.
All right, well, that's sounding a bit negative, isn't it? But I certainly take your point that many companies being largely conservative at the moment, given that that background. Well, in fact, you mentioned some results, particularly as we start to get into the banks. One of them we're going to do today. Another couple of companies too coming to us with some updates, which we'll get across. Our stock of the day, though. Well, in fact, before we get into that, let me just tell you what we're going to do in the first half of the show. We're going to take a look at DroneShield, ResMed, Kogan, Megaport, and LGI Limited. Our stock of the day is Woolies. Yesterday we did Coal, so we're following through, but there is some news to go on today because it has announced it's selling down its stake in Endeavour Group ahead of its third quarter sales update. The proceeds will be used to fund a buyback later this year. It stated it would hang on to its remaining 4.1% stake in Endeavour for at least 60 calendar days, hinting that its sale of that holding could occur in the month or two ahead. And the 5% of Endeavour that was sold at $5.22 a share in a block trade. Outgoing Chief Executive Brad Banducci saying the company has currently no intention of selling the remaining stake, but will continue to assess it at this point. Taking a look, it is one of those few stocks that's actually heading in the right direction today. It is up almost 1%, and its competitor there, Coles, also in the green today off the back of its update yesterday. Henry, I think I know what you're going to say about supermarkets, that you don't find them terribly exciting. Nonetheless, we all go there. They do make money. What do you think?
They do make money. Well, I flew in late last night from Perth, so if you'll excuse me if I yawn a little bit too much, and this one is a little bit of a yawn. I seem to remember that both Andrew Wyland and myself had it as a buy a little while ago. I think he had it as the buy of the decade. I'm not sure I would go quite so far as to say that, but it's an interesting move, I guess, from Woolies to be selling Endeavour and buying Woolies, which is what they're effectively doing if they're going to use the proceeds to fund that buyback. I mean, it's safe, it's dull, it's boring, it's on its lows. Clearly, Brad has had his issues, and we are going to get a new CEO in the due course of time when he's managed to do his lap of honour and wring every last lunch and boardroom perk he possibly can out of the company. And then at some stage, you know, Woolies will have a little bit of a fight back against Coles. But, you know, when you look around at the retail trends that we've got going at the moment and the cost of living pressures that remain on consumers and are going to continue to remain, we're not going to see the RBA cut rates. And there's even now a bunch of guys coming out and trying to grab some headlines saying they're going to raise rates. I don't think that's going to happen. But certainly, you know, this is going to weigh on both Coles and Woolies. And a lot of people are going to go to Aldi. So, you know, although here it's tempting and we did put a buy on it a little while ago around these kind of levels, I think it was a little bit lower actually. I think it was just under $32, but it's not really doing much. I can't see this Endeavour really stimulating things. I guess in some respects, though, it does enhance their ESG credentials, getting out of pokies, or at least getting out of half of their pokey exposure, and maybe in 60 days' time, we'll see them get out of the rest. So that's obviously going to overhang Endeavour for a little while. Results tomorrow, hardly going to shoot the lights out. I don't think it's buy of the decade, as Andrew said, but it's, you know, it's probably a nibble here. It's a quality company long term, but at the moment, the headwinds in consumer land well and truly against it, I suspect. So for me at the moment, it's just a hold.
A hold. Okay, Ben.
Yeah, I'd be I agree it's not the most exciting one out there to look at, but I actually think it's a buy. You know, purely on valuation, really. Like, we've had the Peter Dutton attack threatening to break up the supermarkets and look at pricing, you know, pricing commissions and all this sort of thing, despite the fact Woolworths makes about a 2.5% profit margin on groceries. So look, the fear of that and combined with some slightly softer sales numbers recently has seen the stock, you know, trade back to a pretty reasonable valuation, I think, for what is still a good quality, albeit slow growing business. You know, it does generate a return on equity of over 25%, which is, there's not many companies that do that in this country. So it's still got good financials, and I think based on valuation, it's a buy.
All right. How do you compare it with Coles then?
I'd go Woolies over Coles, I think. Although I would say, you know, Coles' numbers recently were stronger than Woolies. Mm. But, you know, I think Woolworths has got a bit more optionality in some of the things that it's doing outside of supermarkets. And it's been well, despite the negative press Brad has got, I think he's actually been a really good operator. And, you know, you sort of think about when he took it over, he's done a great turnaround job.
All right, that is our stock of the day, Woolies, a hold and a buy. Let's get into the stocks as picked by you. The first one being Drone Shield. It comes up with counter drone electronic warfare solutions. And they sell to military, intelligence, government, law enforcement, also infrastructure and airports too. And this one is actually picked by Braden. He says, I am a current investor in this interesting company working in the electronic warfare space. They've recently announced a share purchase plan to raise capital to build up inventory to support a strong pipeline of potential opportunities and conduct further R&D. The offer represents quite a discount on the current trading price. Is it a good idea to take up this offer? Ben.
Okay, so we're jumping from probably one of the most boring companies to one of the more exciting. I'd say to Braden, it depends on how much he's got in it already and what percentage of his portfolio it is as to whether he should be adding to it. That's the first thing I'd be looking at. And the discount's not massive. In fact, I think the share price was actually trading under the share purchase plan offer yesterday. So keep a close eye on the share price. You might be able to get it cheaper than 80 cents. Look, I don't know about this one. All I will say is, there were reasons given for the capital raising. I think the biggest reason that wasn't given was just the massive run in share prices has had. And, you know, they've done the right thing. They've raised money at a very good price and they took every single dollar that they could get. So, you know, they raised about 110 mil, which is a very large amount for a company of this size. And the shares will be issued in multiple tranches. So, you know, the other thing I'd just be aware of is, you know, we were offered stock in this in the placement. It was absolutely sprayed across the market. There'll be a lot of people who have ended up with shares in this who are probably just wanting to make a quick buck. In terms of the actual company fundamentals, sales and earnings are going through the roof, which probably warrants a lot of the move in the share price. It's just really hard to know how sustainable that is. Due to the nature of this company, it's almost impossible to know, you know, who its competitors are, what their products look like versus Drone Shield, all these sort of things, because their competitors are private and there's a lot of security issues around them providing this information. The second thing is, you know, these companies typically are selling in short-term waves. You know, it's not a long-term recurring revenue stream that they're building up. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of conflict going on in the world at the moment, which has been great for them. But I kind of hope that that doesn't last. And, you know, you might find that some of the excitement out of this fails. It's not overly expensive. There's only one analyst that covers it, and he's got it trading on 25 times forward earnings. Which for a business which is growing its earnings at this rate is probably cheap. I'm going to go a hold. I wouldn't buy it personally. Mm. I'd be really wary of it personally, but it is profitable and it's not like you're paying a crazy multiple for it, but you've got to have a lot of confidence that this business can at least hold those profits for the next 5 to 10 years and grow them from this point. And I've got no idea whether it can do that or not.
Henry, what do you think?
I would agree with Ben on a lot of these things. I've just bought this one. We looked at this one when they're about 30 odd cents, and it's in my small cap portfolio from 70, around that sort of price. I also took profits at $1.05 and thought that I'd got a little bit too early as it went to $1.15, but then they had this issue at 80 cents. So it was a big, big discount and very opportunistic. The company, I guess, to some extent, has used the last couple of really big rises opportunistically. We did see a big run to 90 cents, and a couple of the directors sold down quite a big chunk of their holdings, which was a little bit concerning. But it then picked itself up off the map, and then, as I say, went bananas. They have been doing pretty well with their contracts. And unfortunately but they are the beneficiary of increased drone attacks in Ukraine and an increased focus on, I guess, the emerging technology that is drone attacks. And these guys are at the forefront of this technology. You know, we saw Iran launch that drone strike against Israel. Most of those were actually shot down. But it's not just the simple thing of shooting down drones, because unfortunately they do break up and they do cause damage elsewhere. So it's a little bit more involved in that. I don't mind this one. They've They're closing the SPP early. Friday is the close of this one, so bear that in mind. 80 cents, they're trading at around 83.5 cents, so you're not getting anything particularly wonderful. And as Ben says, you know, one stage in the last few days they did dip below that. So as with all these placements, it was a pretty big placement, 100 odd million bucks, very, very heavily oversubscribed, as has been the SPP. Every man and his dog wanted this thing at 80 cents because it was trading at $1.15, and it was an easy earn for a lot of these funds that make quick and easy profits. I'd be a buyer around the 80 cents. I'd be happy to take the SPP, but it does depend. You know, if we see a ceasefire in the Middle East, which hopefully we will, then it does take a little bit of that urgency out of the situation. And similarly, if we did see a calming down of Ukraine, which I don't think is going to happen, by the way, then that could take a little bit of the urgency out of this one. But it's a great technology company in a good growing space. It's not just about war. It's about protecting other assets from drone strikes. And the economics of drones has become such that they are cheap and easy to launch, and you need something to take them out of the battlefield scenario, or at least protect other assets, airports, concerts, etc. So, you know, these guys are in the box seat. So I like it long term. Under 80 cents or SPP at 80 cents, I think it's a buy.
All right. Yeah, I do envisage a future where you look up in the sky and all you can see is drones, because they are growing at an exponential rate in terms of their use at the moment. All right, let's move on to our next stock. It is ResMed. We've done this a few times. Of course, it has been moving, given the rise of those GLP-1 drugs, which was seen potentially to impact its business. It is a leader in providing those devices for treatment of sleep apnea and also chronic pulmonary disease. And this one coming to us from Reza, saying, I own this. I'm almost break even. I'd like a rundown on it. Henry, what do you think? Third quarter gross profit margin there. Operating profit margin was did surprise some brokers on the upside. Inventory levels, they were cut to the lowest level in a number of years as they increased their efficiencies there. So how do you see ResMed?
Well, Ben and I will argue about this one, because we have done in the past on ResMed. I think the business model is not what I would like, I have to say. The whole business model is predicated on finding new customers continually. It's not a software as a service kind of model. It's not a recurring revenue model. Yes, once you bought the machine, you can buy bits and bobs and mask, you know, a new mask, but who needs a new mask? You might buy the new silicon filler to ensure that there's a good fit to your face, but generally it's not really an ongoing revenue until they bring out a new model. So it does rely on getting new patients in the door, spending money and making it easier for them to take up the machines. And most people, or a lot of people, once they buy the machine, after 6 months or so and looking like they've just flown in an RAF mission across one of the Ruhr dams with Guy Gibson, tend to leave these behind, and they sit on the shelf somewhere and they don't get used. So that for me is a bit of an issue. Clearly their margins have improved. They had a big push up, Philip being the word, because Philips had a machine that got stopped because of some issues there with foam. At the end of the day, we can dress this up any which way you like it as a technology stock, but it is really, it blows air up your nose. The technology, the important technology for ResMed, is the diagnostic technology, which they can use to tell you that you need one of these machines. Once you buy one of the machines, all it does is blow air up your nose, which is fine, and they do it very well. They do have competition. For me, it's had a massive bounce. I was a seller of this in the mid-30s before the GLP-1 thing happened. And we were looking at buying it, and we did buy it for sort of below 27 bucks and all the way down to some extent. I would be easing out of this one. If it got back up to sort of $34, I'd be a very happy seller taking the profits on this one. It's had a good run.
Yep. All right. So, Ben, are you as negative?
No, I'm not. Yeah, we will disagree. This is one of our larger holdings. We've owned it for many years, and I'll touch on a couple of other things. The first is the biggest issue that ResMed have faced over the last 3 or 4 years was all of the COVID knock-on impacts, where they were launching their new AirSense 11. There was a massive backlog of demand for this product. And you know, Mick Farrell said it was the first time in the company's history that every single machine that was rolling off the production line was having someone's name and address stuck on the box and sent straight to them. They're slowly clearing through that backlog, which is good. But what the backlog created was much higher production costs because of the chip shortages, et cetera. It created delays in production, and that created a weaker margin for this business. And so Mick's, the CEO's take on the last couple of years was, if a new patient presents to us with sleep apnea, rather than saying, the AirSense 11 is 6 months on backlog, they were selling the AirSense 10, the old machine, at a real knockdown price with a promise that we'll supply you an 11 when they're more freely available. And what that did was that that reduced their margins, because the AirSense 10s were being reduced on much lower margins than the 11s are. And what he promised to the market, and I remember the quarterly earnings call well when the share price got hit hard, was that the margin story will recover as the backlog clears, inventory clears, and we're seeing it's playing out exactly how he promised. Mm. And this is a CEO I think like got a lot of regard for. He's delivered in spades for shareholders. But the other thing I would say, we're not always, I'd be a hold on this one. It is trading on 28 times forward. So that is still cheap for ResMed. ResMed, since we've owned it, probably trading between 26 and 34 times. I reckon some sort of band around there. Mm. The 6 months ago was a once in a generation buying opportunity in this quality business. But Eli Lilly has come out with the results of its Ozempic or GLP-1 versus sleep apnea global trial, and has shown that this drug does offer some real benefits. And so, you've got to pay attention to that, because the market's gone from freaking about Ozempic to now It feels like it's almost ignoring it.
I think that's about a third of the cohort with apnea.
That's right. So this is the thing. Only a third of ResMed's patients are overweight.
Yeah.
Only a third are overweight to a point they'll be able to lose enough weight to not need
a machine.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say on this is there is a real SaaS business within ResMed, but it is small at this stage versus the engine room. I'll go hold.
A hold. Yep. Okay. All right. So diversity of opinion right there on ResMed. All right. We better pick up the pace. Maybe you make the next one quick. I have a feeling you will. It is Kogan, the online retailer. Nora wanted to know about this. Did have its third quarter update. Gross sales off by 10% year on year. And market sales there continuing to deteriorate. The stock was hit hard as a result. Ben.
Sell. This is not a business I would own. There's two factors behind that. I hate the fact that every time this stock runs hard, the two founders sell so aggressively into those runs. So Russell Kogan and David Schaefer sold another big swagger stock 3 weeks, I think it was, before downgrading the quarterly earnings guidance. I've just seen this countless times of this company. It's trading on 33 times forward earnings, which is not cheap. And what we've seen is that they did sort of 5 million EBITDA in January. That dropped to 2 million in February and 2 million in March. It's so volatile. The EBITDA of this business, it could be a buy, because it moves around month to month dramatically. Mm. And maybe the market's thrown out the baby with the bathwater. But it's for that reason that I wouldn't want to own a business like this. It's just too up and down, and I don't like the aggressive insider selling that we've been seeing.
Okay. Henry.
Well, I actually added this one to my small cap portfolio last week, I have to say. But on the big fall, and I was looking for a little bit of a bounce, I did think it was a little overdone. It has kind of plateaued, if that's the right word. $8.50. I mean, come on, it's crazy. Back down to $5 on the back of this number and some of that selling from Ruslan and his friends. So it's not got the greatest track record. I'm certainly not there for the long term, but I was hoping for a bounce. It hasn't happened as yet. Certainly the broker commentary is not particularly great about this one, especially as we had a relatively strong outlook commentary from the company before this latest update. And that doesn't really give you an awful lot of confidence that things have deteriorated that much. But for me at $5, it's probably not a sell. As I say, I did add it at around this price for a bounce higher. So I'd be looking to sell this one into any kind of rally. And if it just stagnates here for a little while longer, then I might just pull the pin and just say, well, that was not the best idea in the world, and move swiftly on with no damage really done, having bought it around the sort of $5, $5.10 level. So yep. I'm not too much underwater, but at the moment for me, it is a hold.
A hold, but looking to sell. Okay. Let's move on to our next stock, which is Megaport, picked by Ryan. It is a network as a service provider. It's software-defined network. It helps businesses connect their network to services via a portal. And in fact, its annual recurring revenue tracked lower on quarter on quarter and below averages. That's according to some of the brokers there. All right, Henry, and did actually lower its CapEx by a third too. What do you make of it?
Well, this is another one that I own in my small cap portfolio. Really still happy to own it. It's obviously been under a little bit of pressure, mainly because we have seen US tech stocks under pressure. You know, we've seen NASDAQ down 4 or 5% in April. So it's a bit of a tricky one. If you're buying tech stocks in Australia, we do get a bit of a sentiment wind from the US. So for me at the moment, it's probably a hold. They did lift its full year earnings guidance to between 56 to 58 million bucks, which was a small, nearly 6% increase. So that's good. And certainly, you know, if our tech sector was to decouple, or the US sector was to continue to bobble around, then it will have volatility. But for me at the moment, it's a hold. I've got no reason to sell it. It's has broken down a little bit chart wise. So I would need to see it stabilize around sort of 13.25. But for the time being, it is a hold, and I'm still holding it. But it is, you know, it is volatile because of the US tech sector, which has been certainly under a little bit of a cloud.
Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, I'm going to go sell on this one as well. Just on valuation, it's trading on 140 times FY 25 earnings, and although there's no doubt they're in a great spot with the AI demand we're going to see coming through, you know, that quarterly update, they paint it as an upgrade versus their guidance, but the analysts were already at that number. You know, if you looked at the Visible Alpha consensus data, they it was really sort of 1% above what the market was already expecting. And there's a couple of components in there that the analysts clearly were a little bit disappointed with, I guess. So look, I think it's well run, it's in a good spot. There's a lot of things to like about this business. It's just extraordinarily expensive. You know, rather buy Google on 25 times than Megaport on 140.
All right, there's a hold and a sell on Megaport. Our fifth stock is LGI, just picked by Dom. And it recovers biogas from landfill, then use it to produce, generate electricity. It has about 28 projects across Queensland, New South Wales and the ACT, generating that dispatchable renewable energy, and did recently confirm its FY24 earnings guidance. Ben, I don't know that I've done this one before. What do you think?
I've never heard of this company before either. Really interesting, you know, I had a quick flick through their recent investor presentation. Really interesting business. So I think from what I can work out, they approach, you know, these massive rubbish dumps and put in infrastructure that helps them collect the methane that the rubbish releases, and then connects that mini plant to power infrastructure and sells that gas into the network. So, you know, that's pretty interesting and pretty cool. Look, $3 million NPAT. in the first half, I believe, and a 260 million market cap. It's trading on about 35 times forward earnings, so it's up there in terms of price, but I'm sure that there's a fair bit of plant and equipment and assets that these guys own, so probably we shouldn't be just looking at the earnings numbers. The revenue did fall last half, which, you know, maybe is just a little bit of a worry for a business that's trading on a higher valuation. It is a very capex intensive business, so, you know, if they sign up a client, there's a lot of money they've got to spend up front with a long-term income stream that they're going to generate as a result, sort of like building a toll road. But I'm guessing quite strategic assets once they're set up. You know, I could see this appealing to some sort of trade buyer, or, you know, a Cleanaway or a Bingo or someone like that, or, you know, sort of these environmental funds. So I'm going to go a hold because it's not cheap, but it is got a really interesting niche. And, you know, I can see that these sort of assets would be really in demand. They've got 31 sites they've already got signed up and operating around the country.
Henry.
Yeah, interesting. I guess one of the problems with this one is the liquidity. The volume is sporadic, to say the least. Some days it can trade 2 million shares, and the other days it can trade 700 shares. So that is a little bit of a concern. The big jump up, which happened in sort of the beginning of February, was the announcement that they had entered a contract with Bingo, the dialer dump people, with the Eastern Creek landfill site in Western Sydney. So that gave it a real big boost, I guess. And you could see that in the share price, which went from $2, it's basically up to $2.90. I mean, there's been some other announcements along the way, results, etc. But that was the big catalyst, I guess, that that started the revolution. So for me, it's a hold. It is expensive. It has run hard. It's an interesting business. The problem is the volume and liquidity, which means that it can jump around a little bit. It did nothing for donkey's years before the Eastern Creek deal, and then it sort of had a re-rating on the back of that. But it's certainly an interesting business. And, you know, as Ben says, going forward, this could appeal quite nicely to a utilities company looking for that ESG credentials. And a bit of greenwashing, never hurt anyone, as we know. But it has run pretty hard from $2 on that Eastern Creek announcement to $2.90. So if I held it and I was a bit of a shareholder here, I'd probably be looking to take some profits, at least sell some here at $2.90 because of the liquidity issues. But if I was coming to it and I was looking at it from a new perspective, I'd probably go, yeah, okay, it's on my watch list. Yeah, I wouldn't be buying it at $2.90. I'd probably wait till it dropped back to $2.60 and have a look at it properly then.
All right, that is LGI. Let's sum up the first half of the show. Our stock of the day, Woolies, and, well, Henry calling it. It's safe. It's boring. But it is tempting, given it's near its lows. He's got a hold on it, though. Ben, though, finding a more compelling valuation at this point, he's got a buy on the stock. Those ones as picked by you, Drone Shield. Ben's saying it's a hold, but it's a wary hold for him. He's just a little bit worried about the business there, whether it's particularly its sales, which he says have gone through the roof, are sustainable. Henry said he took profits early, but he's putting a buy on it. ResMed, certainly we don't have agreement on this one. Henry's likely to trim at this point and does worry about the business model with pointing out the lack of recurring revenue there. Ben disagrees. It is one of TMS's largest holdings there, seeing margins having recovered. Still cheap, he says, he's got a hold on it. Kogan, a sell from Ben and a hold from Henry to sell when it actually lifts at this point. He did buy it. He added it to his small cap portfolio more recently. Megaport, Henry also owns it. He's got a hold on it. And Ben, though, has a sell on it, saying it's just too expensive. And LGI was a double hold from our guests. All right, let's check in on the High Conviction Fund, which is picked by our investment committee. The latest episode of That's Live, you to watch at ausbiz.com. Checking in on the update, going into April, Camplify was sold, Woolies in at 5% weighting, Soul Pats and Macquarie were trimmed by 2%, BHP was increased by 2%. In terms of its performance, it's up 30% on a cumulative return basis since its inception in March 2022. So keep your requests coming in and keep the call switched on to see what our committee will be looking at next. Second half of the show, we're going to take a look at Macquarie Group, Sandfire, Amcor, Computershare, and James Hardy. So let's get into it with one of the biggies there. Macquarie Group is investment bank, financial services, and the world's largest infrastructure asset manager, or one of them at least. I see that Citi pointing out that in the last, it's just about to report, and its last two main results have said I'm disappointed, and the broker's seeing their similar risk heading into the upcoming results. Ben, what do you think?
The Macquarie's in an interesting spot at the moment because they have actually, you know, the recent earnings announcements have been quite poor. And that's really due to the part of the cycle that the business has been in. You know, we've seen a lack of IPO and capital markets activity. We've seen a lack of volatility in the energy energy market division. The higher rates are putting pressure on valuations in some of the assets they've got in the Macquarie Asset Management. Flip side to that is that we are seeing signs that these things are starting to get better. So we're seeing more volatility in resources. We have started to see the IPO window opening. I think the IPO window is now open, the IPO market. Saw this Tamasea floated successfully recently, and I think there's more floats to come. And so we're seeing market activity picking up, and we are in a bull market, let's not forget. And the other thing I'd say is I've got quite a few mates at Macquarie, and I can tell you that there has been a lot of costs being taken out of that business in headcount over the last 12 months. Everyone in there is nervous about being made redundant. There's estimates somewhere between 5% and 10% of staff have been laid off. So Macquarie could come out of this downturn with a much leaner cost base. And, you know, if you start to get those revenue numbers pick up, the earnings could really recover quite rapidly. It's trading on 20 times forward. I'd say that's not cheap for Macquarie. Which normally trades high teens, but I also think there's a chance that earnings number is better than the market expects. So I'll go hold.
Henry?
First of all, I'm going to have to apologise for the noise that was in the background because it is torrential rain up here on the northern beaches, and we do have a particularly noisy roof. So it has eased off a little bit, so hopefully you can still hear me. Macquarie, I called this a sell at our last investment committee meeting at $200, and we did lighten the load at that price. I think it's interesting here at $1.85 or whatever it is at the moment. It is an interesting one because we are going to get results very shortly. We're going to get those results on Friday. Now, there's a couple of things at play here. When Ben says that he's got lots of friends around there and they're all worried about their jobs, that's not a great environment for the Millionaires Factory. I have to say, you know, it may be a more focused business, but it doesn't do anything for staff morale. And Macquarie is one of those businesses where sentiment is very key. You know, it's a key thing. You've got to have the confidence in your business and your abilities to go out there and be a buccaneer and raid and pirate and make as much money as you can for your team and your division, etc. I spent 7 years at Macquarie, so I kind of know a little bit of the mentality there, and constantly looking over your shoulder is not a great environment. Also, the other thing that worries me, and the market took it in its stride, which I thought was extraordinary, was Nick O'Kane leaving, the rainmaker, the guy that was making all the money in the commodities division, left. Not only did he leave, but he also went and worked for somebody else. Not necessarily in competition, but that to me was a little bit of a concern. So, you know, clearly there's, as we would say in England, in North of England, there's trouble at mill. I'm not sure that tomorrow, or Friday rather, when we see the results, that's going to be enough to assuage those concerns about Macquarie, because they have disappointed a little bit. And although it is a bull market, deals are still few and far between in terms of the IPOs, etc. And Macquarie have lost out to, you know, people like UBS and Barrenjoey. They're not the go-to anymore that they once were. So that is a concern. The thing that I think is the upside here in Macquarie is AirTrunk, which is this big data center business that they started, where they have ownership with a private equity group. I think it's PSP, not PlayStation. So that is a potentially a big sort of kick for them if they can sell that. They're talking about $15 billion valuation on that one. So that is kind of a left field kind of thing and the IPO or some sort of sale or some sort of liquidation event is in the pipeline. So that is a positive. But as far as the rest of the business goes, I think it's, you know, they've disappointed twice. They've lost the key man. They've come off from $200 to $185. They've got results Friday. I'm not sure they're going to shoot the lights out. Could be wrong. But for me, here it's a hold, but mainly because of the air trunk. But if they disappoint on Friday, that would be three in a row. That's unheard of at Macquarie. And if everyone's looking over their shoulder waiting to get the redundancy package, that ain't good. That doesn't give anybody any confidence to go out and be one of the masters of the universe.
All right, so an unconvincing hold from both, essentially, from Macquarie Group. We will wait on those results when they hit us on Friday. All right, we better pick up the pace. Sandfire getting into the resources with a focus on copper. It was out with its quarterly report yesterday. The main asset, Ben De Grusa, copper gold deposit in WA, reported disappointing third quarter results with Macquarie saying, well, that was according to Macquarie, production coming in 10% below expectations, operating costs 25% above forecasts. The quarterly uptake contained a number of negative surprises, particularly related to its Matza operation in Spain. Henry?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, this one, because there is a dearth of copper plays on the Australian market. You can tell that by the fact that Bougainville Copper has been rallying, and they haven't produced any copper for decades, nor are they likely to. So Sandfire, it's kind of a rarity now because of Oz Minerals is gone. BHP now very complicated. Rio is probably the go-to in the big cap space. I would say, you know, it's a disappointing production number. Motheo's volumes were weaker than expected. So for me, it's a bit of a ho-hum. It's probably a hold at these levels. I did have it as a sell at $9. I thought it was starting to roll over, but it seems to have stabilized there. It's, for me, it's a hold because of the copper story. But yeah, if I could find a better big cap copper story, I would prefer to go that way.
Well, maybe BHP if it gets its hands on Anglo American.
Oh, it's too complicated. How long is that deal going to take to consummate? They're betting on the fact that Anglo will do all the work for them and get rid of all the bits they don't want and clean up the company so that BHP can take the big bit they want. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah. All right, Ben?
Yeah, it is a tricky one for all the reasons Henry's just said. There's not many ways left to play copper. The copper price has had a massive run. I think it's caught everyone by surprise because the economy globally is meant to be slowing. And, you know, it's called Dr. Copper for a reason because it leads the economic cycle. And it's done something very different to what the economic cycle seems to be doing. I'm not a fan really of Sandfire. We used to own this years ago, but you know, this Matza copper mine in Spain, it was sort of an all-in bet as De Grusa ran out. And you know, the company's got about $500 million in net debt still left over from the purchase. They're guiding to be profitable in 2025. So this isn't a profitable business at this point. However, if the copper price keeps going, this share price will keep going. So it really will come down to what the copper price does. The copper price run very hard. It feels like it's probably due for a breather.
Yep.
So
we got that a bit overnight. It was down 3%.
Yeah. I think I'd go a sell.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's move on to Amcor. This one picked by Jonathan. It is in packaging and supplies, beverage, pharmaceutical. It's March quarter results out today. Management raising FY24 EPS guidance above about 2% above market consensus there. Volumes down, but less so than in previous periods. Ben.
Yes, you said, Andrew, quarterly's out today. I had a quick look at it. We don't own the stock. So they did raise guidance, and they've raised guidance for the full year as well. But it's a bit above what the market was expecting. If you look at the share price reaction, it sort of feels like the market was maybe expecting a downgrade out of this stock. We have seen, Aurora is another one. We've seen weakness in these packaging companies. They again, like copper, you know, are a bit of a pulse for the economy. If people are buying, then there's lots more demand for packaging. So it still does have quite a bit of debt, Amcor. It's got like a net leverage ratio of about 3x they've guided for by the end of the year. hard for me to get excited, but it is trading on 13 times forward, and it does pay a yield of about 5% fully franked. So on valuation, I go a hold, but it's not one we own.
Henry?
I'd agree with Ben. It's a hold for me. Certainly, you know, raising guidance was good, and I suspect the market was going for a reaffirmation, because that seems to be the way of things at the moment. It is defensive. It is not the most exciting. They did make the big US acquisition. It's very much on that. That seems to be going relatively okay. It can trip up a lot of Australian companies. So that has gone relatively well. Yeah, I mean, there was nothing wrong with the numbers, a bit of an extra guidance and defensive. And when you've got markets tumbling, you know, 90 or 100 points some days, defensive is good. And when you chuck out, you know, the defensives like Coles and Woolies, which are, you know, got the retail component, admittedly Amcor has got a little bit of that. But as you know, as the world moves to better packaging and more sustainable packaging, that can only be a good thing and give Amcor another sort of leg there. So it's a hold from me. Not very exciting, relatively good yield. It's not massively expensive. They've just reaffirmed guidance, perked up on the back of it. But
shrugging your shoulders. I mean, all your holds.
I know, but what did you say?
Less than convincing.
I just can't see there's a lot of growth in this business.
Yeah, where's the growth?
Yeah, I mean, you get a dividend and it's going to chop around. And, you know, like Henry said, you know, that they are still early days into that US acquisition. And as he said, you know, we saw with Aurora that made a big acquisition. It's already looking like it's a disaster. So I don't know. I couldn't buy it, but 13 times is not expensive for a business like this.
All right. Next one, Computershare, picked by Han. It is the shareholder registration business, also expanded into mortgage loan servicing as well. First half EPS, pretty much in line with consensus forecast guidance, reaffirmed there, growth of 7.5% on the previous corresponding period. Henry?
We got more holds than Greco-Roman wrestling at the Olympics. Jeez. This one's sort of come off the top, I guess. It is a little bit interest rate sensitive as well, because they have, you know, a lot of money on deposits. So the higher interest rates go, in theory, the better CPU is in some respects. Also, of course, it is very dependent on volumes, because it shuffles shares around for people as a registry. I mean, I don't mind it, but again, it's you know, it's not the most exciting. I'd probably have this one as a hold as well. You know, $27, just shy of that at the moment. It's come back a little bit. And, you know, if we are going to see interest rates stay high up for longer, which does certainly seem to be the way of things, this is going to help a computer share. But equally, you know, that might put people off from buying and selling shares and buying and selling mortgages, etc. So we might see a little bit of a turn down in that business. But it's probably a hold at these kind of levels. You know, it's run relatively well from sort of November, December lows of $23 to $27. So it's not cheap, but with interest rates going to be sticky and staying where they are, I think this one just will probably track sideways.
All right. Once again, less than enthused. Ben?
Yeah, I'm a hold as well. I'd rather hold this than Amcor, I would start by saying. It's trading on 15 times, so it's a little bit more expensive, but I think there is more growth in this business long term. You know, I think we are seeing the IPO window open. That's good for Computershare. It is a cleaner business. It sold that US mortgage business, so, you know, it's always been quite a complex business. Computershare does a lot of things in a lot of different industries. Higher bond yields for longer is good for this business, as Henry said. 3.5% yield looks okay to me. I'd rather pay a bit more for a business like this that's, I think, got more growth. I guess the only negative long-term I can sort of see is that it just feels like stock exchanges around the world are shrinking. And, you know, we've got less and less market capitalization, less businesses wanting to list on the market. Because there's so much money in private equity and venture capital these days, you don't need to list. And we're seeing the big industry super funds taking companies off the market. So, you know, certainly in Australia, we have seen the shrinking of the ASX, and that's less potential clients for Computershare. I think they'll find a way to grow their earnings, and I'd have a hold.
Okay, once again, a double hold. That for Computershare. Let's round it out then with James Hardy. It's picked by Jason, is the global building materials company. In fact, the largest manufacturer of cement products globally. And just taking a look at, I guess the focus here, particularly it's got a substantial business presence in the States, is that most recently single family housing starts fell by 12% month on month. So you would see that potentially is impacting the business there. Also, you got the interest rates playing their part as well, which way they're going to go in terms of the building industry and how it's going to impact it. So, Ben, what are your thoughts on James Hardy?
Yeah, I think this looks pretty good. We don't own it. This is a very well-managed business that has done a great job through a fairly turbulent environment, and the share price has pulled back pretty hard recently. It's probably come off about 10 or 12%. All earnings updates have been exceeding market expectations, and the market seems to be constantly worrying that there's going to be this sudden downturn. But the reality is you know, if you look at Australia, you look at America, a lot of the Western world is, you know, I don't know where this problem suddenly arisen from, but there's so much pressure on rents. There's so much, it just seems there's not enough housing stock for the population sizes. And we're seeing in a lot of different countries, politicians are really trying to free up red tape and get building. And, we know in Australia, there's this plan to build 1 million houses by the end of the decade, whether they get there or not. But if they get halfway there, that's still a lot of new housing starts in this country.
Well, you might have the materials. You don't have the labour, though, do you?
That's one of the problems. No. And there's a lot of them in the building space. But the other thing I'd say is CSR, Boral, and there's one more I'm forgetting. CSR, Boral, and Adelaide Brighton Cement have all been taken out by trade buyers this year. And, I think there clearly is a view within the industry that this is, you know, there are long-term fundamentals. Brickworks, which is one of our largest holding, Lindsay Partridge, the CEO, said he believes we're on the cusp of a once-in-a-generation building boom that's coming. So I think this is a well-managed business that will take advantage of that. And as we spoke about with copper, there's just less and less ways to get exposure to this these days. So I'll go buy.
Yeah, okay. Henry.
This was actually my advent calendar buy in December 2022, around $27. So they've pretty much doubled. So that's gone pretty well. And for all the reasons that Ben says, I don't know where they're going to build 1 million houses, because that's just not going to happen.
1.2 million by 2029.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, it just might as well say 2 million houses. You might as well say 3 million houses, because it's just absolute pie in the sky stuff. There's nobody wants these houses near them. The NIMBYs are out in force. The red tape is colossal, and they haven't got the workers to do it. So I don't know how they're going to build them unless they have tiny homes. Anyway, I digress. James Hardy is very much a US stock. The US housing market, much like ours, is going very, very well still in terms of pricing, because nobody in the US is moving. Because as soon as they move, they have to refinance. And as soon as they refinance, their 30-year locked-in mortgage at next to nothing has to reset to 7%, and they're completely and utterly stuffed. So they have to renovate if they can't move. And, of course, that plays into James Hardy to some extent, as long as they can refinance, I guess, for the renovation money. But, you know, that's a different question. I don't mind this one. As Ben rightly points out, the problems are we are in an ever-shrinking universe. If you're just an Australian investor looking at the ASX, we're losing CSR, we're losing Boral by glacial steps, admittedly, and we're losing Adbri as well. What's left? James Hardy is the only one. And as Ben says, there is an appetite for building material companies around the world, because we know there is a massive shortage of housing. You know, we've got one person living in a massive house when there should be, you know, four people in there. But that's the way of the world at the moment. So I don't mind this one. $53. I think there's potentially, because of the way the market's feeling at the moment, there potentially could be a little bit more downside. Maybe we could see 50, but once it gets to 50, it's probably worth starting to accumulate there. So it's definitely an accumulate, verging on a buy. It's come off a long way. It has risen a long way, but the US dynamics of their economy is still working for it, and the whole dynamics of the housing shortage globally is working for it as well. If we could just find some people to build these houses and places to build them, it would be so much easier.
Yeah, well, then you've got to pay them too. Given what tradies are running at the moment.
Extraordinary. Don't talk to me about that little game. But anyway.
All right. So let's accumulate rather than a buy then, because we came very so close there to getting a double buy. But I think you're ruling that out, aren't you?
I think there's a little bit more downside just because of the negative sentiment in the market. It could come back to sort of $48, $50.
All right. Nonetheless, was the most positive stock we covered today.
Yeah. Dig in.
Put it a buy, Henry, and then we can talk about it on the committee
your investment
next time.
Committee, which you're going to have
in
about.
A month's time.
Yeah, but it might be back at 50 then.
I'll put it as a buy then.
All right. Yeah, you can have a chat about it. There you go. All right. Do negotiations then. All right. Let's sum it up then. The second half of the show began with Macquarie Group. It's a hold from both. This is a bit tricky because it comes ahead of its earnings results on Friday. But just wary that it's going to be another poor result. Sandfire, the copper producer there, a hold from Henry. Whereas it is a sell from Ben, given how far it has run. Amcor, it is a double hold from both. Computershare, also a double hold. And finally, James Hardie, we got it across the line. It is a double buy, one for these guys to consider at the investment committee. And thank you to our experts. Henry, thanks for joining us, Marcus, today.
Pleasure. Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
And Ben from Teamers Capital. Good to see you.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Henry. Hope the rain's let up.
Yeah, can't hear it now.
It's stopped now, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go.
Typical.
Perfect timing. All right, that's our show today. Any stocks you'd like us to cover, go to ausbiz.co/callpicks, or you can write us on the platform X at AusbizTV. Thanks for watching.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.